Hello and welcome to Differential Discussions. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Dave.
And today we're here with our guest series where we're going to have Vicky Cunningham join us to talk about how super techs, so the laboratorians working the bench, how they're amazing bench techs, bench laboratorians, they're not always super supervisors. So, Vicky, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Vicky, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I actually, at this point, I'm retired. I had the wonderful work experience of being able to work in laboratory hospitals from a 25-bed children's hospital up to a 1,700-bed university research center, and a whole bunch of places in between. I had opportunities to work at the tech level, very basic stuff, all the way up to intense study of hematology and teaching, did a lot of teaching, and had positions from, as I said, just at the bench level to being a an educator in what was actually an MLT program, and then also as a technical director for a hospital. Yeah, so it's just a kind of a hodgepodge of background, and which helped me see how to maybe answer some of the questions of why aren't super techs always super supervisors?
Well, you think it would be intuitive that if you're an amazing laboratorian, that you would be an amazing supervisor in the laboratory.
Well, you, Dave, and I would include myself. We really truly had great technical training. The universities where we studied, the kinds of clinical rotations that we had, put us in a position where we truly could become world-class technologists, or the medical laboratory scientists. And great technical training will do that if you have someone who's willing to put in the work. However, being a supervisor is not technical, it's relational. So a supervisor is a manager of people, not of getting the work done, not of getting 100% accuracy on your testing process. And I do believe that it requires a lot to be a good supervisor. There has to be study. You have to be able to study it, and then you have to practice it, and then you have to learn from the practice, and then go back and study and practice and learn from the practice. And excuse me, one of the things that if I can, I just I can go ahead with this.
Go for it.
Things that I think, and from my observation, is that most often people fall into a position of being a supervisor. They're in a job. They've been a great tech. They've done everything people have asked them to do. They've done a good job in the past. And so the supervisor position needs to be filled. So what do? They look for somebody who's done a good job in the past, somebody who has the qualifications. And then if that gets presented to the person, there's a couple drivers for a lot of the techs to look at, like, oh, it's a lot more money. And so often, they'll take the job because it can be a significant increase in money. And the other thing is there's no weekends. At least they think that there's no weekends. So it's like those are often the reasons people get into a supervisor position within the laboratory. Now, if that is the case, they're often going to do a poor job. And the poor job is because there's a lack of training, There's probably a lack of support from the people who could enable that person to do a better job, and usually a lack of education. And I mentioned the education piece because MLS programs usually provide an intro to, you know, like they give you some tools. And I don't know exactly what your program was like, but I know that in mine, we had a management course in our program. And it was like a 3-credit management course, as if we were going to be able to know how to be good supervisors from that. And really, truly, all those courses show you is how little you know. You know, that it doesn't give you enough of the tools. And so really, truly, what you need to do is to get actual management coursework. So the thing is, if you really decide that you think you would like to be a supervisor, one of the things that you should do is you should seek other education. And I did this talk several years ago, and I looked up several different universities and in that had education programs that really truly were geared for people in technical fields, not just med lab field, but technical fields, helping those people to figure out how to do that transition from being technical to being supervisory candidate. And there's like a bunch of different things. It's like business management, creativity, organizational behavior, and just things like that. But it's like a whole course work, I mean, a whole body of information to be able to get. And one of the universities, only one, had a piece that was on conflict resolution. Well, let me tell you, you need that. And I feel like more universities should include that. But the other thing that I'm aware of is that that education piece, maybe you get a master's degree in it. Maybe it's just a certificate program. But that is the tip of the iceberg. Because if that's where you stop, then you have a whole lot of head knowledge, but not the application. So,
if I could step in too, I just want to step in to echo your point. I just finished my MBA. And so a lot of those courses resonate, and you're right. They taught me these things and these tools, but let me tell you, without applying them in a real life environment, that I still don't feel like I would be equipped to be a supervisor, right? Would I be better than some? Perhaps, but just knowing the stuff isn't enough, right? You have to actually put these things in practice. Great. Yeah.
I totally agree. And so one of the things that's really important is to look back at your own experience, like your personal experience. And certainly we have the, what I said is you have to study it. And then you have to practice it and learn from your practice. And again, it's like putting together that body of knowledge, which is what you just alluded to. There is a body of knowledge, just like in med lab sciences. There's a body of knowledge that we've got to have. When you're supervising people, there's a body of knowledge that's got to be there. And then I'll mention, I mean, what do physicians do? They go to school. Then they go to medical school, and then they go to, you know, they have their internships, they have their residencies, they this, that. And then what do? They go into practice. I've always thought that was funny. It's like, okay, so if you're going into practice, that means you're practicing on me. But it's, you take that body of knowledge that you have, and then you're trying to apply it, which is exactly what you said. So that you're in a great place, you know, having that body of knowledge, but you truly have to be able to put it into practice and then learn from the things you do well and the things where you make mistakes as well. I think another thing to look at that helps us become better supervisors is to look at the supervisors we've had. We can all identify the best supervisor we had. We can probably all identify the worst supervisor we've had. And the thing about that is that's a good thing for us to be able to identify that. We want to identify the characteristics of those people and then learn from them. And if I can, from my past, a supervisor that I had, this was early in my career, this person came into the job, kind of fell into the job. She had no training, no background. She had in management, but she was a great tech, really, truly was. And she ended up being the supervisor. And then in this, she hired someone because we were missing bodies. It's not unlike it is today in the laboratory, trying to find bodies to fill the holes that you have. And so she hired this person and brought the person in, gave some cursory training, and then he was on the shift by himself. A CSF came in and he was not able to process it appropriately. The person had, the patient had an infection, and it was not a good outcome for anything. Now, was that the staff person's fault? Not necessarily. But what I see is that that supervisor didn't realize how important training is, didn't make that a priority. And the other thing is, it in that situation, one of the things that I did is I actually went to an administrator, talked to the administrator about it, and suggested that they let this supervisor get additional training so that they can understand how to go about being a better supervisor. And there was no support for the supervisor. So again, was it the staff person's fault? No, not really. Was it the supervisor's fault? Not really. It, you know, it was at the administrative level. They were not providing the kind of support that they should have for that person. Now, the administrator also, because I had a bachelor's degree and this other person didn't have the bachelor's degree, they asked me to take over. Thank heavens I had enough wisdom at that point to say, no, I don't have the qualifications. I don't have the work experience to be able to do that. But they would have let me go right into that position.
So it's kind of funny. It's almost as if they treat managing people like it's something like, you just pick it up, right?
Yeah.
The way you just pick it up. Whereas like, if we were to kind of flip that and say like, oh, laboratory practice, you just pick it up, you know?
Yeah.
The way they treat it is so blasé, you know, like, you know. Yeah.
Totally agree. And it's not just that one experience, but I mean, I've seen it multiple times. People who could have been really super at the bench level, just that didn't translate in the relational part. Now, one of the another experience, and I share this partly because it's kind of funny. When I was in grad school, I was like learning from graduate school, you know, all the classes and the research I was doing, but I also was getting input from some of these supervisors that were teaching in the classes that I was taking. They would do like guest lecturing, that sort of thing. And this one woman really stood out. She knew her stuff, and it, you know, her background was in coagulation. And I loved it. And I wanted to have more opportunity to be with her and to learn from her. So I applied after grad school. I applied to her laboratory and got the job, was hired in. It was great. My training was going great. And I was really happy because I kept thinking how much I was going to learn from her. And like about 6-7 weeks into my work experience there, she made the announcement that she was leaving because she got an offer as tech support for MedLab sales. So, you know, I had to kind of work hard at learning as much as I could from her while I was there in that short little window of time. So it's like, you know, we do know who does a good job. We also can see who doesn't do a good job. And we need to learn from that. We really do.
It's sad. You see people getting promoted into incompetence effectively in a way that's strange. That's called
Peter principle. You get promoted to your own level of incompetence. And I mean, the Peter, I mean, it's a, there's a book written about it even. So, excuse me. So if you want to be a super supervisor, I have a few suggestions. The first one I've already said is that you need to make the decision that you want to be a supervisor. It's not that you couldn't develop into a super supervisor after you got in there, but it takes a lot of hard work. But if you know and you make that decision prior to, that's great. That's the first step. And then the other thing is pursue the education. You know, find and honestly, people management, you don't have to go to like a school that has the best people management type thing, because that is a universal kind of skill. So there are a lot of places that you could actually go for that. And then certainly the other thing is you really need to look at your personal experience, as we said. And then from that personal experience, you want to be able to practice what you see, and you want to continue to make observations about the people. Any other comments there, Dave or Melissa? We on target?
No, I think that's great advice.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think we've all seen this before. And, you know, I've seen people like awesome techs. They work super hard. They get promoted to supervisor, and maybe they don't do amazing. Maybe they do okay, but then they burn out.
Oh yeah,
they burn out, Vicky.
Because
they're trying to get that expertise in real time and like a live fire environment, and then they just run away and they say, "I don't want to manage people," like places people lose good people.
Correct. Yeah, and often my take on it is that often you lose the good people because you don't provide the support that they need. I know that the two of you are wanting to do a talk on mentoring. It behooves us in the laboratory field to do a better job of mentoring. We traditionally do not mentor well. And so that's a problem. So I commend you for wanting to talk about that. I think that would be good. I'd share also that I think that once you have those pieces that I mentioned, you know, the decision making, you're observing things in pros and cons about supervisors, and you getting some education as you move into that role. There are a few things that really you need to key on that will get you to that next level, that'll get you to that point where you become the supervisor people want to work for or with, as opposed to just someone who's maintaining status quo or limping along or ready to run out of the room screaming and crying, that sort of thing. And that would be, I think, vision. The other thing is communication, and then discipline. think probably of all those, the discipline is probably the hardest. The vision area is maybe the most complex. There's so many aspects to it. But if we have time, maybe we could break that down.
Yeah, let's break it down. What do you mean? So vision, I can see, communicate, I can talk. Discipline, I got a stick.
Yeah.
I can hit people.
Can we start with the stick? Because I really do think that's the one that people struggle with. So like, even me, so like as a tech with another tech, I can be a little, so if I see you doing something incorrectly or, I should say it a different way. If I see you doing something like negligent, reckless, I can be a bit prickly, right? With someone my equal. I've been in positions where I was supervising like a couple times, and I find it very difficult to be corrective. I don't know the right word for this, but the stick. I find using the stick to be very hard. I don't know if that's the introvert in me. I don't know what that is, but how do you use the stick?
There may be some of that introversion in you that causes that, but my experience is that I have observed is that usually people have trouble correcting their colleagues and don't have trouble correcting the people that are beneath them. Which is, so it's kind of interesting that you're like that. We'll have to think about that one. Melissa, I thought you were alluding to the fact that, you know, so what is vision?
Yes.
So honestly, this is like something I think is important. A lot of it is cerebral. Maybe that's why I like it. I don't know. But there are different kinds of vision. If you want to be a supervisor in a particular institution, you need to realize that that institution has a set mission, vision, and values. That is always going to be there. And you should study that, because if you can't ascribe to those, that mission, those values, then that's probably not the best place for you to start to be a supervisor. There have been a lot of studies made about cultures of institutions, medical or healthcare institutions. And what they talk about is that there are the professed visions and values. There are the observed ones. And then there are the hidden ones. So it's really important for us to be able to study as much as we can to see, you know, what is this place really, really about? And you know, does that fit with my, how I feel, my view of the world, that sort of thing. I know that one of the last institutions that I worked for, they had written down this incredible mission, vision statement. And I kept thinking, you know, they can't be that good. You know, they can't really, truly be like that. So I was actually looking for where that broke down, and I didn't see it. So what they had on paper was truly what they did. So it was they professed it. They actually acted on that. And man, I thought that's great. I really appreciated that. So now if you're going to be a supervisor, you're also going to have a supervisor. So no matter where you go, there's always going to be somebody higher than you. And so you need to figure out what's the vision of your supervisor as well. You need to be able to learn that. You might learn that by sitting in meetings with them. You might learn that from conversation. And as you learn that, another decision you need to make is, can I accept that? You know, can I work with that supervisor? And that become, because otherwise, if you are going against someone that has a different vision than you do, you know, it's going to, that same feeling of wanting, you just want to get away. You don't want to stick it out. So the other thing is that you're going to have staff. If you're a supervisor, there's going to be at least a couple people on your staff, if not 40, 50, 60. And you need to figure out how to share what the vision is, what your vision, what the institution's vision, what your supervisor's vision is, and you need to engage the staff in that process. There's a lot to say about that, you know, but there's a couple little things that might be helpful to think about. And one is, like, as you develop the vision and you figure out how to share it with somebody, you have to have a process. And in that process there, you need to find out what is the aim. In other words, what needs to be done or what do you plan to do? And then there has to be a goal, which becomes the result. How am I gonna know that I did that? And then there has to be a plan. And that's the how. So when you see that process, you set that up, you figure that out, and then you have to perform it, and then you have to evaluate it. So it's just what I said before. So it's like, it's not rocket science. It's you get a plan, you start doing something, then you have to put that in play, and then you have to evaluate that, then you go back, make the plan better, perform it, evaluate it. It kind of reminds me of the, I wasn't going to say this, but kind of reminds me of how they used to sell, I think it was VO5 shampoo. They'd say lather, rinse, repeat. You know, so it's like it's the same process. You keep going and you just get better at it. One of the things that I don't think they include this in, well, they didn't include it in my lab training in university, but I think it's really important. And I learned it when I was working in residence hall work for 3 years. I had a hiatus when I was off out of the lab for field. And I decided I didn't like counseling in residence hall work. So I went back to the field. But anyways, I learned a lot about goal setting, and that's how you're going to set up your thinking about the plan. I mean, about how you develop your vision or how you're going to share the vision or complete a project, anything like that. And there are like MARC, it's called an acronym, MAR, M, it has to be measurable. It has to be achievable. Now, you know, I might want to see world peace, and I decide I'm going to work on getting world peace.
Took it from my mind, Vicky. It's exactly what I had in my mind.
So is that measurable? Well, yeah, it would be measurable, because then we could just interview everybody in the world. And are you happy? Are you at peace? And they all say, yes, that's great. Then, so it's measurable, but is it achievable? Yeah, not as long as there's a few people breathing, something's going to go wrong. So it needs to be achievable. So instead of shooting for Saturn, shoot for the moon. You know, so achievable, what you're wanting to accomplish challenging, but don't make it impossible. The R, so M's measurable, A is achievable, R then would be, it's results oriented. I mean, how are you going to know that you actually accomplished it if it's not results oriented? And then it also should be clear. Read things that people like, they felt for sure what they were writing or what they had said was totally clear to them in their mind. It doesn't always translate. You know, it should be more cut to the chase.
That's usually my first draft.
I was going to say, I need Melissa to review anything like of value that I write.
Sure, I get that.
I'm blind to it. I will literally, this was a thing in college where I would write something and I tended to do my work way ahead. I was actually pretty good. I was the anti-procrastinator, even being somewhat of a lazy person inherently, but yeah, it was because it was out of necessity. I would write something and I needed like the night or, you know, or period of time. And then you read it and you'd be like, what was I even thinking? I just didn't execute well, but.
But what was my point there? That's great. That's great. Yeah, Dave, I'm learning so much about you. It's very, I love it.
Good.
So if you're going to set like this kind of a plan in action sort of thing, I think it's important to understand more about the process. And if you're actually, you know, you get a plan, but then in the performance, you have to be pretty specific about how that's going to go about. And the one of the important things to think about is, you know, like, who's going to be responsible for what? You know, if you break down all the tasks that need to be done, okay, well, who's going to be responsible for this? Who for this? Who for that? It shouldn't all be one person. It shouldn't. The other thing is you need to by when should this be accomplished? Certainly if you're a student in university, your professor is going to say, okay, well, I want this paper by the 20th. It needs to be on my desk by the 20th. Well, if you're doing a project or you're trying to develop a plan, you need to do the same thing. Otherwise, it will just go on and on and on and on and on. It reminds me of road work, you know, road work up in the Boston area. You know, it's just like, oh, well, who's going to set the end for it? You know, nobody.
No ends.
You have a perpetual job. Yeah. So another thing to think about is who is going to hold people accountable. Now, as the supervisor or a technical director, that's probably going to be you. And again, we're going to have to challenge Dave, because Dave's going to have to go back to those people and say, okay, well, you were supposed to have this done by such and such a date. You know, how are you doing? You know, are you going to make that date? And there was one really huge project that we had when I was the technical director at a regional medical center, about 350 beds. They said 375, but it was seriously, it was more like 350. But what the hospital wanted was for us to be more hospital. The administration wanted us to be more of a kind of the beacon for the tri-state area. And one of the things that we thought we could do was become the outpatient draw hub in that area. Because it was a fairly rural area, a lot of outlying physicians' offices, but they needed a central place to have blood drawn that wasn't, I don't want to use a name, but, you know, wasn't some famous laboratory testing mega place. So what we decided, we were going to develop this patient draw area. So develop a plan of action, you know, go to the staff. What do you think would help? What do you think should, you know, would add to us being successful doing that? Went to the physicians, you know, does this sound like something that would be helpful? And if so, what would you like to see? You know, what would make things smoother and easier for you? We also went to administration and said, hey, we got this idea. You know, would there be, you know, should we go ahead with this plan? Would there be support for us as we do it? So we were able to draw up, okay, we need a site on campus. We needed easy access for the patients to get in and out. We needed to be able to get them registered. We needed to be able to know what kind of testing the physician wanted ordered. We had to be able to read the handwriting of the physicians. And we had to draw the right tests. We had to know where to send them, how to process it. We needed supplies, blow, you know, anyways, listed, like it was a bazillion things that needed to be taken care of. Went back. Okay, who's going to take care of this? Who's going to take care of that? And the supervisors that were working with me, that I should say that I got the opportunity to work with, they were super. That honestly, they were great. They were more like a working supervisor. They were on the bench, but they were supervising a small group of techs. So everybody had responsibilities. And sometimes, most of the time, it was in their of an area of expertise. Not always. Few people had to take some for the team. And then it was like we set dates, timelines. Now you want it to be challenging in the timeline. You don't want it to drag on like road work. And so we made challenges to, I mean, we set what I thought were pretty challenging dates that we had to accomplish things. But we also knew that we had to move those sometimes. Sometimes we'd get done early. I was like, yeah, this is great. Sometimes, oh man, there's no way we're going to hit that date. And we'd have to shift it. So a lot of flexibility had to occur. And then, the who's holding ones accountable, that ended up being me. I was in the job as a technical director at that point. And, you know, not working bench, but still working very closely with the supervisors and also the staff. And I'll tell you, of all the things that I did there, that was one of the top five accomplishments that we had, because we became like the place for people to go to have laboratory testing done. And we were able to do all the basic kind of laboratory testing. Certainly there were esoteric tests that we ended up sending out to the mega laboratory facilities, but we were, you know, like all the CBCs and CMPs and liver function testing and cultures and stuff like that we were able to do. So it increased the revenue for the hospital as well. And I forgot to mention one of the interesting things too is the interface with people in the hospital. So I mentioned like registration. So we didn't know how to register. So we had to engage with the people in registration. You know, how can we get them to be a part of this as well? We had to have a build out. You know, we had to be assigned by building management an area. And then, okay, well, who's going to build this? And who's going to give us our little cubbies? And how are we going to make it safe? You know, good airflow, blah, blah, blah. So it was, we were engaging people all through the hospital. Anyways, that went really, really, really well. Happily. When we were finished with that, though, we went through an evaluation. Now, I would venture to say that most of the time when people in the laboratory decide they're going to do this big project, they're very happy to get a big project done. It's like, phew, got that off my, you know, I can scratch it off my to-do list. That's fine. I'm done. Moving ahead. What's the next thing? And I would say the next thing always, always has to be evaluate. You know, that loop back around. I'm going to sound like a broken record, but that loop back around of, you know, were all the goals met, and was it done well? What can we correct? How can we do things better in the future? And I just really think that that is often lost because that's not how we think. I mean, obviously you guys know my background is hematology, and it's like, you know, I gotta read a differential and I'm gonna struggle on it, and I gotta work really hard to get it perfect, and I want to know every single cell, I want to see what's in those cells, blah blah blah, all that sort of stuff, and then okay, it's done and I can put that aside. I mean, that's our MO in management. That's not the MO if you want to be really good at it.
Had one thing kind of come up to address before we maybe conclude or wherever this goes. But in my work history, I have seen supervisors who have a very difficult time delegating tasks. And then so they end up trying to do them all themselves and sort of like self-destruct in slow motion. Like, I don't know if you could comment on that, but just an observation I've seen. You talked about assigning tasks to people and holding them accountable. Sometimes supervisors don't do that very well at all, right? Like,
that's right. And I put that under the category of time management. And honestly, it's like, if I had just done a talk, that would be like my next thing I would talk about. So, boy, Dave, you're spot on. You've got this down. You didn't need me here. You just needed somebody to lead you on. It's really, really important to know what your time is worth. As a supervisor, you need to know what your time is worth, because I don't know any supervisor that's not that's paid hourly. They're I'm forgetting the word for it. But it's like salary. Salary, yes. Thank you so much. I guess maybe I am too retired at this point. Yeah, but if you're on salary, it's like when you go over that 40, 50, 60 hours a week, the amount you would be getting paid is less and less and less if you look at it on an hourly basis. So there are things that you have to do to do a better job. Now, how do I know this? Because I didn't do a good job when I became the technical director. I mean, I inherited a really bad situation. It was very difficult. Needed somebody that had more time to put into the job to be able to make some corrections. I don't need to talk about all that right now, but it was a mess. It really was. So much so that there was a union coming in to try to take over. And my job was to fix things so that the union wouldn't come in. So anyways, I didn't do as good a job as I wish I had in knowing what my time was worth. So some of the things and that can be helpful, one is delegate. And you need to learn the kinds of things that you can give up. And you can't micromanage that. You can't ask somebody to go do something that they are capable of doing, competent in doing, and then look at every little detail of what they do. They're a different person. They're going to do it a little bit differently. But use that delegation as something that allows you to do a better job yourself. And in that process, it is super, super important. Again, I learned this from my experience, is that you need to know your day's schedule. Absolutely have to know your day's schedule. And I think that's where I started using those calendars I always carry around. I still do that, I'm afraid. It's a lot smaller. I don't use the big giant ones anymore, but they're a lot smaller. But you need to know what your day's schedule is. In other words, you have to know what has to be accomplished this day, but not just this day. What has to be accomplished by the end of the week, the end of the month, and then the quarter. If you're a supervisor, you've got to get that quarter of the year mentality going. And to be able to figure out all the things that you want to accomplish or that you need to accomplish, honestly, make lists. I know Melissa does that. And I don't know, Dave, I don't know if you do that, but my guess is if you've been so successful so far, you probably do that as well.
I do a worse job of it, but I have lists.
Well, we all have, like, it's a varying degree. Yeah. I still make lists. Otherwise, I don't know what I've accomplished sometimes, or I don't know how much I need to accomplish. I finally have my husband doing that some, and that's been helpful. He's getting the taxes done earlier than he used to. So that's a good thing. So if you've made your list, then when you look at it, there are certain things that have to be done that day. But you have to look at also the very difficult things. The things that are super difficult or are going to take more time. Those have a tendency to, you know, let's skip over that. I want to be able to scratch this out. Well, I know I can bang this out really quick. Well, I can do this really quick. You won't get the difficult tasks done if you do that. And one of the things that I would often do is I would get a 3-hour block and just put that in my schedule as if it were a meeting. And then that's when I would attend to some of the more weighty tasks that needed to be done. Otherwise, they don't get done, at least not as quickly. Another thing that I found was helpful is don't just use your calendar or your list, use technology as well. Now, you guys, you grew up using technology. I know that when I got my very first iPhone, the first thing I did is I brought it to work, gave it to Melissa, help me know what to do. You know, because you guys just think that way. Not everybody does. And I'm not somebody that was like that, but I learned how to use the technology for reminding me of appointments that were key. Like, I don't want to miss my scheduled meeting with my vice president. That would not look good. So build that in so that I get an alert 10 minutes ahead of time. And then, oh yeah, okay, I have time to go to the bathroom, put a little lipstick on, and then I can go in. So it's like those kinds of things. Use whatever technology you can to help you out there. So I have no clue what time it is. I don't know if we can go on.
Don't worry about it. Keep going.
Okay. So another thing I think is really, it kind of goes into helping people develop vision or knowing what's going on within your laboratory, within your institution, is motivation. And what'd you say?
It's huge. It's huge to be a motivator. That's a big part of being a good supervisor.
So what is motivation, Dave?
I wouldn't know. I'm too lazy to.
I don't believe that. But wouldn't you agree that it's different things to different people?
100%. Yeah.
And multiple studies have us looking at like generational areas. Like, you know, we had the silent group, the baby boomers, the Gen X's, the Gen Y's. And honestly, since I was in management, there's also Gen Z's, Gen Alpha's, and who knows how many more are going to come after that. But it's like everybody in those kind of those categories, they are similar because their history is similar, where they grew up, the kinds of impact, like the people who came after 9/11 never knew the Twin Towers. They never had that impact of I remember exactly where I was standing when that happened. And my guess is most of the people who were alive then remember that as well. But it's like different things affect us. And so different things drive us. So if you are in a laboratory, I think it's really important for you to figure out kind of, you know, what's your population? What is this group of people that that I'm working with, and how is motivating them going to be different from motivating a different group of people? Now, that is really, really important. Really important. However, the thing is, we know that even though we're in a particular category or a particular generation, we're not always the same as that. In other words, because we're different. I mean, we're humans. We have different ways of looking at things. But so if you're going to be a great supervisor, look at your people, kind of see what the generational motivators are, but also look at them and realize that, you know, there's going to be some people who sit outside that box or maybe blend into the next generation, that sort of thing. I know that one of the things that have really challenged supervisors was getting this next generation after the people that were like committed to, you know, if I go into this institution, you're good to me, I'm going to be good to you, I'm going to stay, I'm going to stick there. And then, whoa, next generation is like, hey, where's the money? You know, I'm going to go over here. Or I want a new thing. I want something more fun. So you really get to know the people and also know that there's going to be some differences around there as well. None of us fit all the models, I guess. However, I would say that there are truly some universal motivators that we can use and need to use on a regular basis. And one is being appreciated.
I was going to say pizza, so I guess that is the same thing, right?
Yeah, you know, what's a driver? Is it their stomach? Is it food? I mean, we all worked with someone who a driver for that person was food. That would make him very happy, was food. So it's not always money. You know, very often people say, you know, well, show me the money, you know, or, you know, you want to make me happy, you want to make me motivated, pay me more or give me more time off. But it's not always that. You don't have a control over how much money you give people. That's done by HR. I have more to say.
Struggle too for a supervisor, isn't it? That's a struggle, because you can recognize employees that are extremely valuable, but it's sort of outside of your hands in most situations, right?
As far as financial helping them out. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you better appreciate them. You know, you can really appreciate someone. Another thing is getting them involved. There are people who may, and I've seen this. I had this two people in particular I can think of. They were this kind of, I don't know, you'd call them like standoffish. You know, it's like you come to a meeting and they're like, you know, when is it going to be over? Kind of got them involved in a little project. And man, they were like turned on. It was a huge motivation for them. Another thing, being listened to. I know that being listened to, and that doesn't mean just they're saying, oh, yeah. But it's taking in what a person's thoughts are or their ideas and thinking about them. And, you know, can we do something with this? Well, hey, that's a great idea. Why don't you see if you can process that? What do you need to be able to do that? So you listen to the person and then, you know, get them involved, that sort of thing. And some other things is, yeah, as you know, get people involved, you trust them, you know what's going to happen? They're going to trust you more. Yeah. And honestly, the being able to lead them and doing a good job leading, in other words, not just maintaining status quo, but leading people, helping them see that we're accomplishing something. Honestly, that's a huge motivator for a lot of people. And again, people that you wouldn't necessarily think would be people that would want to get engaged, it can really be huge. The other thing would be communication, and good communication, I should say. The time with staff just truly is key. Spend time getting to know them, hearing what they have to say, reflecting comments back to them, that kind of stuff, that really does motivate a lot of people. Again, those are universal. You could take that to a, I don't know, Harris Teeter grocery store. If you're in management, use those. It's gonna work. So it's not just money. It really isn't. I'm not quite sure if I should go ahead and get into this or not, but when I mentioned leadership, good leadership, it's like there are really truly leadership styles, and being able to know what those are and use those well can help with this overall vision of your laboratory, the direction that you're going. I've used this quote before, but it was, do you know who Dwight Eisenhower was? President Eisenhower? Did you know he was a general before he was even president? Well, when he was still a general, one of the things that he said is that leadership is the art of getting someone else to do something that you want done because he wants to do it. So, you know, if you're a good leader, you're going to be able to do that. And there, I've been able to identify four different leadership styles. All of them can be used in the laboratory or Harris Teeter, wherever you want to work. But the first one will be directing. And in directing, the person that you're trying to lead is somebody that, say, lacks competence. They need training. They need more education. They need more guidance. They need security. I think of like some of the first jobs that I had. My very first job that I had was ironing for this lady. And, you know, I said, sure, I'll take this job. I was going to iron for her. But I didn't know how she wanted me to do it. I didn't even know how to plug the iron in because it was a different kind. Anyway, so, you know, I lacked complete confidence. I needed training. I needed some security. So she had to direct me. Directing. The second one is coaching. And I think that's why I like coaching basketball and volleyball. But coaching, really, the person needs guidance. They have some competence. They already have some training, but they need some guidance. And one of the things that you can do, you guide them, you also have to praise them, you know, builds them up. You give them feedback. Yeah, this was great what you did. Next time, why don't you try this as well? It probably would help you do better. So that's the coaching. So directing, coaching, and then the third one is supporting. Supporting is you're with that person that comes to you. They are competent. They are skilled. They probably lack assurance. So your job then is just continue to help them realize that what they're doing is great or good. If there's things you can coach them on, you go back to the coaching, you coach them up, but they just lack assurance. You know that because you can observe them, and you just need to basically support them. So there's directing, coaching, supporting, and then delegating. Now, I will say that this is a throwback. Delegating leadership can be one of the scarier things for us, a person in supervision, because if you delegate responsibility to a person, then that's going to come back on you if they mess up. It's not going to really be them, it's going to be you. But you see this person who has all the skills that they need, they are competent, and honestly, at that point, they're at your level as far as competence, maybe more so, and they have commitment to a particular task. They're sold out, you know, it's the I'll go to the end of the world to get this accomplished kind of thing. So the responsibility of a supervisor in guiding or leading the person that is at that delegating level, it's huge. It's also wonderful because you look like you do a whole lot more. But it also has that person engaged much more. You do a good job through those steps. You get to the person that is at that, you're able to delegate things to, then you're in a good place. And I had one staff person who was like that, and she helped a lot back at that that big project that we did in the hospital. I was talking about the outpatient draw area. This person was incredibly competent. She was a good planner. She could goal set. She was committed to the process. So a lot of the different areas that were very difficult, I could delegate to her. And I would always know if there was a snag, if there was a challenge, what would she do? She'd be back to me and say, hey, this is what's going on. What do you think we should do about it? And then once something gets accomplished, what does that person who is able to delegate do? If it's done, you know, hey, this is all done. What can I do next? I mean, so that's the goal, is to be able to get to that point. And I think another, if I could make one last point here, that one of the things that I also believe laboratory people don't do a good job on is succession planning. Oh, I see some.
Basically absent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I honestly, that I think the two of you are, you're geared that way because you want to do a talk on mentorship. So, you know, you're not going to be able to do good succession planning unless you engage in mentorship. You have to like identify potential in a person. And then what you want to do is you want to share your knowledge. So again, what have we seen in laboratory? The person who's in the supervisor position, who just kind of happened to get in there, it's like there's a certain amount of knowledge and they want to keep it within themselves because that allows them to be a little better than you or a little higher than you. And so you're going to hold a little bit back. If you want to do a good job in mentorship, you want to do a good job in succession planning, you want to be able to share your knowledge. And you share it freely, it is never, ever going to come back and bite you. It will always make you even look better. And with, if you find somebody that has this potential, you share your knowledge with them, then give them opportunity. I've been in situations where I had this experience and was never allowed to be able to put it into play, even though that would have assisted the person that was my supervisor. It would have helped that person. But they didn't want to accept it. They didn't want to give that opportunity. So it just, it hurts things in the long run. So again, if you have someone like that, you give them opportunity, but train them. Don't let them hang. Don't let them keep failing. And always challenge them. Always challenge them.
So, and that can come back to benefit you, because I've, you know, I put a lot of effort into some of the newer laboratorians that were working at the bench when I was, you know, working at the hospital training. And, you know, they become amazing laboratorians, and then they eventually move on. And when they move on, if you guys have a really good relationship, they're going to think of you when other opportunities come up or other things. I've had past students say, oh yeah, you know, you can talk to my former professor, Melissa, here you go. So like, I've had other opportunities come up because of the mentorship, because of the, it wasn't necessarily succession planning, but it was, you know, making sure that I've shared all the knowledge that I had with that person, and they've been like, oh yeah, here, talk to this. So it can only benefit you to have that good relationship and really bring along and coach your employees.
Right. I totally agree.
The greatness of humanity is cooperation. And it's our intelligence and our capacity to cooperate with one another is, I think, what the one of the major things that sets us apart. We should lean into that.
Those are both thumb and forefinger, right? Yeah, I agree, Dave. I really do.
No. Well, I think just to kind of with this one, with talking about the vision and finding, even like having the background knowledge and learning all of the stuff, like developing the vision, goal setting, time management, motivation, all of that stuff. I honestly, because I have my MBA, and most of that I didn't learn in the MBA program. So I think it also depends on the, like, the education that you get. Like, the time management I learned on my own, and motivation, I have a lot of internal motivation. That's personally me. But, like, knowing, developing, I'm right now working on getting my project management professional certification, and all of this isn't there. Like, I'm learning all, well, learning. I'm getting the background theory for all of that for that. But, like, in MBA in general, I don't remember going over that. Dave, did you go over this kind of stuff?
So some of the things that resonated that Vicky brought up, I think were a part of the MBA program. One of them was I did take an organizational behavior class. Understanding what motivates a large thing like an organization, and then how that influences its behavior, that's important. We work within those structures. But, you know, and then I think there were areas of some of the classes that touched on behaviors that were like, but I don't think it structured it well. So I think that's what you're getting at, right?
Like, they may have.
Yeah.
I also did it a while ago, but I don't.
No, you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong.
I don't
remember. You would remember.
But that's what, I don't remember them really going over and like saying you need to goal set. You need to, I mean, that's just inherent for me, but I don't remember the program going over that at all. So I think too, it depends on taking classes is really helpful and you're going to get the material, but it may not be as clearly laid out. So it is inherent on the student to kind of get that too. So I think it depends on the education that the person gets.
I agree.
Think about what an MBA is too. I mean, it's kind of an amalgamation of things. They teach you a bit about accounting, not a lot.
Yeah.
They teach you a bit about organizations, not a lot. They teach you a bit about marketing, not a lot. I think that and so depending on how the course is constructed and who's instructing it, this is another thing that's important. Mm-hmm. You can get varying degrees of, but yeah, I think a lot of like to be successful, I think we can say Melissa and I, we've been somewhat successful. We've been around people. we've been around people that mentored us, mm-hmm. You know, that were involved in kind of growing us. And so I think in an informal way, we learned a lot of these things mm-hmm. through the School of Hard Knocks. And
Well, again, that's at that, what I had mentioned before, is that you get information, but you have to put it into practice and then evaluate it, come back around, you know, and you are constant, you should be constantly practicing. And that's if you want to be great at it. Now, the two of you, I can't imagine you guys doing anything that's less than stellar. But there are people that are just happy with status quo. And honestly, those are the people that just, you know, like they get the in a position, they just maintain things. So again, that it's that decision. Do I want to be that kind of person? Or do I want to make a difference? You know, and I think that that's really, and I think that's really important. Well, thanks. Thank you very much. Yeah. I had a blast.
Thank you. And everybody else, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for your time.